Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 437. And I am going to talk in this podcast about some things that I'm actually grateful for. Actually, one thing that I'm really grateful for in the wake of the Paris attacks this weekend. Well, it is an absolutely gorgeous Sunday in the upper Midwest and in Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's stunning. And I certainly have experienced weeks in November like this. It's about 60, 65 degrees, and I'm sitting on this little hill by my house in the park with the sun shining. And it's amazing. And people think this might be, people running around here saying this is so unusual, and gee, this is weird. And it is, I guess, because most of the time we don't experience this kind of weather. The fall weather is that we will descend into winter, whatever kind of winter we're going to have, pretty quickly. And when that happens, you know, the thing that I want to remind people, you know, I've talked about Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for a long time, and the latest thing is to tell people to have their heating systems, plumbing, and water heater checked before the cold weather starts, mainly to see if there's any weaknesses or see if anything needs to be, adjusted or fixed or whatever before it gets cold, because you don't want to have an emergency problem when it gets cold. Having said that, there are going to be people with emergency problems. So it's really important to remember that Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul is well known for handling emergencies, and they do handle emergencies for business and for residential. And it's important for me to point out the business part as well. So if you have a business and you have an emergency problem this winter, you have rental homes or you own a building where your business is, remember Ryan Plumbing and Heating. You can call them in St. Paul at 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs, too. You see the trucks all over the place. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. I always tell a story about, whenever you have a plumbing problem in the winter, it's a big surprise. You know, you never think it's going to happen because you don't think about it most of the time. And then you don't know what to do. And I remember I had some pipes burst in a house that I owned, and we were going out to dinner, I think, or we were either just leaving or coming home, and it was Christmas or Thanksgiving, and it was really cold outside, and we had a bathroom downstairs that was cold, and it was down in the basement, right, and the plumbing came right through this area by the window. And it was, 30 below zero, and the pipe burst in the downstairs bathroom. And it just so happened that it occurred just as we were either coming home or leaving. I don't remember. And we walked through the front door, and we had like a cement floor in the entryway, and that was where the bathroom was. And here comes this cascade of water into the house, and I just was like, oh my God. And I was young, a lot younger now than I am now, and I remember, where's the shutoff? Like, what do I do? And I found the water shutoff, and then it was a question of trying to find a plumber that could come on a moment's notice. Well, that's why you need to keep in mind Ryan Plumbing and Heating. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. I'll tell you a secret, either number works metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too, as I said. And keep listening for more information about Ryan Plumbing in the Bob Davis Podcasts and future podcasts. Thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So I come to the park every day when I wake up and sit over here in the sun pretty much every day, summer, fall, sometimes in the winter, although it's a little bit rough to come over here and sit when it's 40 below zero, in the park, and I just sort of think about the day and what's going on. And really, I don't talk. This is the little thing that I do when I don't talk, except today I'm going to talk. And I'm going to talk about a couple of things that I'm grateful for in the wake of the Paris attacks. And if you want the latest facts on the Paris attacks, go online and go to a newspaper and read them. I'm not going to recount all that stuff in this podcast. It's unnecessary. Because what I'm going to say is that this is the thought that I have had in the last, it's Sunday morning. This happened on Friday night, basically. And I I am so happy and grateful that I don't have to go on the radio tomorrow and sit there for 2 hours and gin people up and take calls about this horrible thing and what are we going to do about it. And I am so glad that I do not have to add my voice to this cacophony of people who are rushing out to write articles and make statements about what needs to be done in the wake of the attack in Paris and how it's like this one and like that one. And, you know, George Friedman at Stratfor had to rush out and write an article about how it's going to change everything and everything's going to change now because of this attack. And somebody had to write an article in which they quoted Churchill and said, this is not the beginning, it's not the end, but it may be the beginning of the end. And it's all nonsense. And I am so grateful that I don't have to be part of that insanity. And that's one of the great values of podcasting is that you can wait and you can either talk about it or not talk about it. And it's honestly, that's the first thing that occurred to me when I woke up this morning was, thank God I don't have to go in and have some manager sit there and tell me that we've got to talk about this because this is what people are talking about. And I don't even give a damn. I don't care. I'm not saying I don't care about the people that were killed or anything else. I'm saying that this is one of the biggest problems in the West and in modern life is that everybody in media feels the need to rush out and comment. And they don't know what they're talking about. The experts they find are terrible, most of them. They're not there. They haven't been to Syria. They don't. Not that I have either, but I'm not going out telling everyone what's going to happen now. And it's just, and everyone sits there and they watch this, and it's just, it is a cacophony, and it's nonsense, and most of it is forgotten, and I'm just grateful that I don't have to be a part of that, because it doesn't serve anyone. It's not getting us anywhere. It's not solving the problem. That information is not helping people figure out what's going on. It's just fanning the flames of outrage and anger, which is justified. You know, people in Paris were attacked, and there's 100-plus deaths, and it was a terrible thing. And, you know, my favorite thing about these attacks, whether it's a crazy person in Norway or, you know, a terror attack in a European city or the United States, is the preponderance of police with machine guns long after the attack has occurred. So the attack occurs, it's all over with, and yet we've got all of our police capabilities, we've got people running around with machine guns, and we've got all of our trucks and all of our communications capabilities and all of our power, and yet we can't seem to prevent these things from happening. And that's the real problem and the real danger of the age is this inability to prevent this cancer, which is apparently metastasizing throughout the world. And I don't know, are people looking for answers? And keep in mind, these are my thoughts upon waking up. I'm still drinking my coffee. Are people looking for answers? I mean, do you really want to know what the answer is? Are you really willing to, you know, drill down through all of the stuff and, you know, go to the ends of the earth to figure out what the answer is in this particular instance or any instance when these kinds of things happen today? Or do you just want to turn the television on and have someone on Fox, you know, tell you that this is what Donald Trump said and this is why it's wrong? Or this is what the, you know, the Democrat candidates at the Democrat debate had to say about this and you should know this and blah, 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 blah. And it doesn't solve anything. Because ultimately, the people that are going to have to solve this are really the people that that are in the State Department and the Defense Department in the United States and also in countries around Europe, the people who are now running things. And most of them are the people who are going to be running things under a new president in the United States or France or any place else. They're the ones that are going to have to try to figure out what happened and how to solve it. Are there things that people believe that we should do? Yeah. You know, are they going to work? I don't know. You know, there's all sorts of things. But the thing that I'm talking about is I got up Saturday morning and I started looking at all this, you know, reporting, and most of it, well, for me, it's mostly commentary because, you know, I don't even want to attempt to turn on the television to watch these people sitting in a studio in New York talking to people about something that they don't know anything about either. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You ever seen a bar fight? If you hang out at bars, and I used to, there would occasionally be a bar fight, and bouncers would have to go into action, and the police would eventually come, and then there'd be a clot of people out there telling everyone what happened. And there were usually 10 versions of what happened. And the police would be standing there trying to figure out who did what and what happened and how it happened. And that's kind of what this reminds me of. Obviously, I'm not stupid enough to believe that this should be compared with a bar fight, but this is an example of people, half of the people standing around talking about what this guy did or what that guy did weren't even in the epicenter of where the fight occurred. And that's what's going on here. We have everybody talking about this. And why do they do that? They do that because they get paid to go in and talk. That's what they get paid to do. And I know because I'm one of them. I get paid to do podcasts. I pay myself to do podcasts. But when you're on the radio every day, you're staring at a deadline at 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. or 4 p.m. or 2 p.m. on a Tuesday or whatever it is, what day it is when this thing, whatever it is, happens. And you walk into the studio, and of course, everyone's really nervous, and your little manager is really nervous about, you know, what needs to be done, and we need to talk about this, and we have to find experts, and we have to, and I used to say, what am I going to say? What is there to say about this? You know, and this is how, you know, people in the industry get into trouble, because they have to say something, and then, of course, people get mad at them because they said this, that, or the other thing, because they're being exhorted to comment on these things that their comment probably is meaningless in the long run. And, you know, my problem is I like to cut through the quick and just say what it is. And this is what I'm saying. You are not going to stop these kinds of attacks, which have metastasized through the world, by talking about it on Fox News. You are not going to stop these attacks by going in and pulling the lever by an individual president, for an individual president or congressman or anything else. You might get somewhere down the line, but this is a gigantic cancer, which is metastasized and is getting worse throughout the world. It is not getting better. It is getting worse. And we are going to have to try a number of different things. It's, you know, experts refer to this State Department denizens or CIA denizens refer to this as a policy mix. This is trying a number of different things, a number of different diplomatic initiatives, a number of different military actions, a number of different things that over a long period of time may begin to ameliorate this danger of being attacked because you went to a rock concert or being attacked because you went to the Mall of America. Yelling and screaming about it on television and radio isn't going to solve the problem, and it's very doubtful that, you know, someone is going to say the thing that needs to be said that somehow is going to miraculously solve all of this. So there's that piece. And I find it amusing that just in case I didn't say it, I'll say it again, that people write things like, well, George Friedman from Stratfor has got to jump right in right away with an overly intellectual piece tut-tutting about how this is going to change everything, and this attack will be the watershed event. And somebody had to paraphrase Winston Churchill and say, well, it may not be the end, but it's the beginning, but it's the beginning of the end. And the reality is none of these people know what's going to happen. They don't know. And they don't know whether we're at the beginning of the end or the end or the beginning or whatever the hell's going on. And there are hundreds of these articles with everybody jumping in the water because, you know, this is what they do, to talk. That's all it is talk. And it's not getting solved. It's getting worse, actually. So the thing that occurred to me after I came up with that gem was, you know, I've done probably 4 or 5 podcasts this year and last year on foreign policy. And I said, and I'm going to continue to say, that I believe that before we get through the presidential cycle, it may happen before we even get finished nominating a president, we're going to be into a period of time in which we are going to start to see the bill presented for the Obama administration's conduct of U.S. foreign policy. And I don't think it's going to be a credit. You know, sometimes when you don't, when you pay, overpay your gas bill, you get the little thing that says "Do not pay." You have a $59 credit. It's not going to be a store credit. It's going to be a store debit. It's going to be a big bill presented for economic policy and for foreign policy, and we can't predict this event when this bill is presented. We have no way to be able to predict the bill for the economic mistakes, and we have no way to present the bill for the foreign policy mistakes. And I'm one of those people who believes that his mistakes have been much more significant than mistakes of previous presidents, including Bush. We just haven't seen the results yet. So we have to wait for that, and we'll see. And I think it's going that, I think overall, that bill, that event that's presented will probably have a lot to do with determining the outcome of the 2016 election. There have been people writing about the fact that 64% of the population feels the country's on the wrong track. I checked that number. It's stunning. It's high. 50% is high. 64% is ridiculously high. This is a consistent poll result, so this isn't just a one-time, one-off, you know, poll. This is a consistent right track, wrong track poll. And when 64% of the population feels the country's on the wrong track, when I think it's only something like 28% of the people feel the economy is going well, that's a clear harbinger for a change of leadership at the executive, and has been for a long time. If that's going to result in a Republican president, I don't know. And I don't know what that Republican president's going to do, so I'm not saying what we need is this guy. I'm not going to do that. But I've done several podcasts about foreign policy, and I've, you know, kind of laid out the issues, and I've kind of said, you know, how it's going to come, how the new foreign policy is going to have to get formulated, and I still don't see any indication that the rank and file Republican is actually even beginning to think about foreign policy. They just want to go bomb the you know what out of ISIS, or they just want to they want to demand that something gets done. And of course, this is how we get into trouble. You know, this is what everybody wanted, a payback on 9/11, and then of course we ended up invading Iraq. That was kind of and a lot of people, myself included, were thrilled because we got to get some payback, and it ended up being a disaster. So this is how we get into trouble when we have an emotional reaction to something. This is how we get into trouble, and yet that doesn't stop the emotional reaction, and it's visible through all of these commentators that rush out to get their 13 seconds of fame on Fox News so they can keep selling their blogs and their podcasts and their, you know, books and all of their nonsense that they do. And it's an industry. And the people do not seem to know that this is what these people do. Maybe we do. Maybe we do know that this is what they do, and it's a profit center. And maybe we don't. But people don't seem to know that this is what goes on. And these people are selling their books, and they're selling their videos, and they're selling their speaking engagements, and they're just getting out there. And they call this, in the parlance of the media, this is called, in politics, this is called remaining relevant. This is the cynicism that goes on in our country about these things. This is called remaining relevant. That, you know, if I want my podcast to get more feeds, I need to insinuate myself into the process somehow and get on Fox News as some kind of an expert so that I can be increase my feeds, and it would work. I mean, that would work for me to get more listeners. And if I jumped onto Fox News in the moment that it happened, and express my opinions and views. I'm reminded of a colleague once who something happened, I don't even remember what it was, and his first thought was to call Fox News and get on Fox News. You know, I know what it was. It was when the bridge collapsed, and you know, here was this guy on Fox, and he wasn't anywhere near the bridge collapse, but he had to rush out and be visible in the community and in the world for the fact that he lived in Minneapolis, and that. And that was all it was. So the bus collapsed, the bridge collapsed. I just woke up. So that he could talk about the effects and the reaction to the bridge collapse. And he didn't have any idea what the reaction to the bridge collapse was. He was sitting in his backyard or wherever. I don't even know if he was in Minneapolis when it happened. But he couldn't resist being the expert and being part of the media reaction community. So, and yet most of that stuff most of those comments are lost through history. Most of the things that when people do that kind of a thing, that is lost in history and forgotten about. And the comments regarding what happened in Paris 5 years from now, 10 years from now, will almost all be forgotten about what we should do and shouldn't do and everything else. You know, the thing about history is that people point to something that happens in a particular time frame and they say, that's what this means. But the fact is that trends in history are much longer terms, which gives me an opportunity to talk about prideofhomes.com. History demonstrates that one of the paths of personal wealth is through property ownership. People who amass property become very wealthy most of the time. Many people continue to rent while waiting to purchase their first home, or they move up to the next home. And you know, just to describe what that feels like, you know, you sit and you think, well, should I buy a house or not? And I'm just going to continue to rent. I don't know if I should buy a house or what I should do. And yet you hear these stories about the real estate markets and how they're doing and people buying houses. But it's true that in the last 5 years, there's been a lot of foreclosures. There are a lot of houses sitting empty for extended periods of time. You have had a lot of these houses that have been flipped by fly-by-night people. To negotiate that risk, you need people who are real estate professionals that understand the market. And what that means is they understand individual houses on the market. They understand the history about those individual houses. And, you know, they're bent towards customer service to try to help you pick the right house and get into the right house. The other thing is, probably in December, interest rates are going to be raised by the Fed. There's still talk about that. So this is the time to take advantage of historically low interest rates if you're in the market for real estate or somebody close to you is in the market for real estate. I want to introduce prideofhomes.com to listeners and subscribers to the Bob Davis podcast. You guys know that prideofhomes.com is a husband, wife, licensed real estate agent team, and real estate investors with expertise to share with you. So here's the deal. Reach out to Eric and Aram Lucero with Luke Team Real Estate and prideofhomes.com. They are in the North and Northwest Metro, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Rogers, Dayton, Champlin, Albertville, St. Michael, Elk River, the whole North Metro corridor in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Eric and Aram Lucero with Luke Team Real Estate and prideofhomes.com for real estate expertise. Eric and Aram Lucero with Luke Team Real Estate. Visit their website today at prideofhomes.com, or you can click on the banner with Eric and Aram there at the top of the bobdavispodcast.com. That takes you to their page. And guess what? Phones work as well. 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. And thanks, Eric, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So then what do I leave listeners of the Bob Davis Podcast with in this thing? And I'm going to refer again to the fact that I've done several of these podcasts where I talk about foreign policy. And this is before we even got into the primary process. I've talked several times about the foreign policy questions. And I have said several times that what is necessary is that the United States needs to formulate a new foreign policy. And it isn't just the Middle East. It's also Russian expansion in Europe. It has to do with our border situation. It has to do with a lot of other things, that defense spending and everything else, and we need a new package in terms of what our goal is and what we're trying to do and our objectives. And foreign policy does not come out of a can. Foreign policy is something that, it's like law. Foreign policy is developed by schools of thought over a long period of time at universities and at the State Department and through experience, whether it's, you know, the people in the CIA that are actually on the ground or military people who have been part of, you know, these foreign policy expressions, and people who study history and academic understandings of the things that drive foreign policy in the current time frame. And we need a new foreign policy. And that's going to become painfully clear before the end of the Obama administration. And if there's anything you can say about the Paris attack, it's that I've been saying for a long time, there's nothing that prevents these people from just showing up at some location with their toys and shooting people and killing innocent people. And so we're all at war and we're all potential victims of these attacks. And not only do we have to be thinking about that, this is part of the new reality after 9/11. You know, not only do we have to be thinking about that, we also have to formulate some kind of a new foreign policy. The problem is, people, we're now in campaign mode. So now we have people who are supporting candidates and working for candidates, but mostly at least on the right side of the spectrum, and it's probably true on the left side of the spectrum too. They've already solidified their opinions about what needs to be done. that is they are free of any real thought about what actually needs to be done. So here we are. We're going to head willy-nilly into another presidential election, and based on a crisis and based on the reaction of people who aren't there and who are reporting on what other people who aren't there saying about what happened, and they weren't there. And they're not in Syria, and they're not on the ground, and they're not involved, and they don't know the facts. They just know what they think they know. And I know because I've done that, and I've been there. So I know exactly what is going on, and I know exactly what happens, that people have a framework, and they respond to the framework. So if something happens, they respond in the expected way with their framework. And we have a problem with foreign policy. We have shards of beliefs regarding foreign policy in this country. We have people who believe that we need to go over there and kill everyone. They don't obviously include themselves in the going over there and killing everyone. It's someone else that's going to have to go over there and kill everyone. They're going to have to do this. They're going to have to do that. They need to do this. They need to do that. Not thinking that that's going to involve real people doing real things, getting involved on the ground to solve a particular problem, because that's how it works. And then there are people who they think that the solution is to provide more foreign aid and build schools and convince them that democracy is the right path, and work with them to, you know, make them happy and apologize for all the bad things that we've done as a country. And, you know, that's one. And then there's yet another little shard which says we shouldn't be involved in any of this stuff. We should let these people fight themselves and stay out of it, which actually, you know, today for me, I don't know that the other options are any better than staying away from it or staying out of it, which actually is what this president is trying to do to a certain degree or lesser degree. He's just not doing a very good, resolute job of staying out of it. But people have got to figure out what they're going to be for and why when they get ready to vote. And we're not there. We're in the middle of people shouting and screaming, and they're consuming the red meat of politics, which I've talked about in these podcasts, that something needs to get done, and that's it. Well, none of that is going to produce a required reaction to defeating the people who use these tactics to get their point across. You know, my own personal feeling is that we are in a long-term struggle with people who want to go back. We're going forward. You know, we're this close to some huge technology developments in this country and in the West, which are going to turbo us forward. You know, I saw this actually in the 80s and 90s. The late 80s in particular, I'd sort of developed this theory that technically speaking, in terms of industry and technology and so forth, the West is turboing forward and that parts of the world are struggling to keep up. And in fact, you see these reactionary movements, and you see them in the United States too, where people want to go back to the way it was, and they want to go back to 1960 because somehow 1960 was this great period of time. And in fact, the 1960 that they think they want to go back to doesn't exist and never existed. And that time is over, and we are never going back to it. And we've got to accept that and move forward. But that's usually presented, and it's transmitted through the political process. And it's, you know, I'm not going to say it's harmless, but people get their vote and they get their say, and we move on. In other parts of the world, the way that that's handled is I get a bunch of guys together and we get some guns and we go shoot people that we don't like. And we just keep doing that until people give us our way. And that's a really bad situation. Unfortunately, this is a complex situation across the world that's going to take a coordinated approach, and we don't have that. We don't have a coordinated policy mix which addresses these issues. You can't just sit there and push a button and have someone else solve your foreign policy problem, whatever that is. I think personally that we are naive if we think that we can have our institutions that can't deliver the mail, that can't run the trains, that can't seem to administer government at all effectively, that can't seem to educate our kids and everything else. I think we're crazy if we think that that kind of system, that kind of, you know, incapability and incompetence ultimately is going to protect us. We've been lucky that it has, but we're asking a sclerotic, ineffective government to defend us. And in the process, we're asking for our own rights to be curtailed in that effort. And I look at these attacks after I see and hear all of these people who are saying, this is what's going to happen, and this is what needs to be done. And this is, again, all the people who weren't there who are just repeating what they heard somebody else say. It benefits this kind of attack, and this is why nothing will happen, because these people are doing, this is benefiting the established powers in the world on both sides of the equation of terror. It benefits the status because they can increase defense spending, and they can increase spending on surveillance, and they can continue to meddle without any real oversight, in what they feel that they need or want to do. And of course, it benefits the terrorists because they get the media coverage and everyone runs out and talks about it and everyone mentions their name and on it goes. And we spend a weekend trying to figure out who's responsible for it and here's what we've got to do today and everything else. And it benefits everyone. You know, the media benefits because they get more viewers, and the established power benefits because they get more money and more power, and the terrorists benefit because they get recognition and the joy, in their view, of killing a bunch of people, and then we move on to the next thing, whatever that is. Whatever the next shooting's going to be or the next event's going to be, and it's the same thing all over again. We're not making any progress. And, you know, people, it's like stopping the wind. You know, you're trying to stop the wind is what's going on, whether it's the economy or whether it's terror. People are uninformed because they want to be uninformed, and they want their little simple solution to be the simple solution. And I'll tell you what they need to do about this and what they need to do about that and what they need to do about this and so forth and so on. We're not protecting ourselves personally. We're not defending ourselves personally. We're not involved enough to solve a problem personally. We don't want to know about the problems with education. It's too complicated. We don't want to know about the problems with the economy. It's too complicated. We just want what we want right now. And I don't know if it's always been that way or if it's more pronounced today than it used to be, but that's the way it is. You know, that what we're subjected to is this immediate cavalcade of this cascade of voices that runs out every time there is a situation. It's like a nervous system. You know, when you're under stress, your mind tells you things that aren't true. You know, the first thing that happens is your sense of time is becomes confused. And then what happens is your awareness of the world kind of, you get tunnel vision. And then you begin this sort of struggle with fight or flight. And that's when panic usually ensues. And so what we have is sort of a slow motion panic. And this is why these terrorists do these things. And this is why they go for increasingly larger body counts, because it produces this nervous system reaction on the part of our highly evolved electronic media, where everybody, actually it's not everybody, it's just the people that we've decided that we'll use as surrogates on CNN and Fox and everything else, run out and say things, including the president, say things that are really forgettable. They're not memorable things at all. They're just silly, silly things, like ISIS is contained. That was one of my favorite comments from the president a day before the attack. Well, ISIS has been contained. He doesn't know. You know, even the people in the agencies where they sit at a desk and they collect information about, you know, from people on the ground about what's going on, they don't know what's going on. And I guess to myself, I would say, well, is there a response to this? I mean, you know, so do you know what's going on, Bob Davis? And I'd have to say, no, I don't. If there's one thing that I've learned in the last 10 years, it's, you know, 15 years, it's that you can go out and say that you think you know. I can collect all of the information that I can find today, and I can say what I think is going on. But I don't know what's going on, and I'm reluctant, especially with my experience, to say this is what needs to be done, because what I've learned is you really can't put your finger on it. It's elusive. These kinds of problems are complicated and long-term, and they're elusive problems. And I just, you know, today I'm grateful that I don't have to be one of these people that rushes out and tells everyone what they should do or who they should vote for. I mean, how dare these people, you know, tell you who is the best candidate or who has the upper hand or who can tell you what needs to be done? How dare these people say, this is what needs to be done in this part of the world, and if we do this and this, and if you put them in charge, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't know what to do because they would find out rapidly that these problems, you know, don't go away tomorrow. We're in the middle of a 100 years war. I mean, that's basically what this is. This is a long, ongoing struggle with different points that occur every now and then, with deaths, with counter strikes, and with all these other things. This is a long-term struggle between people going forward and people going backward. And, you know, it's complicated. Foreign policy is more complicated than economics because you've got all these things are involved. You know, people are involved, leadership is involved, military is involved, economics is involved, you know, I mean, media is involved. It's a huge piece. And you can't just go tell someone, well, this is the candidate that's going to fix this, because they're not going to fix it. And somebody needs to say that. I mean, if there's one thing that I could add to it, is these people have no idea what they're talking about, and they're full of crap, most of them. Even if they're knowledgeable, they're full of crap, because it's a complicated thing that can't be solved tomorrow. You know, you can point and you can say, this is the problem. But is it? I don't know. I mean, this is the problem. It's Islam. Okay, but there are billions of Islamic people in the world. So you want to start a war with a billion people, you know, you're going to lose. Because we have 320 million, maybe, and they have billions. Right? So unless you're prepared to use all of your power, which people probably wouldn't, because I think people are actually pretty good people. I think people all over the world are actually pretty nice, and they really don't want to push that button, you know. They don't have to push the button, because all they have to do is push the button on their radio dial or push the button on their computer and listen or watch and listen to somebody, you know, talk about what needs to be done. Will there be a response to this? Absolutely. You know, but as Americans and as people in a, you know, Republican country, a Democratic Republican country, and I'm not talking about the political polls, I'm talking about the type of government. We're supposed to, since we're in a so-called pluralistic, you know, representative republic, we're supposed to be thinking about what we instruct our congressmen and our senators and our presidents and our judges, let's say, you know, by extension, what we are going to tell them we want to have be done, and what we are going to instruct them, and how much resolution we have to solving this problem. That's really the key. And to that extent, people need to start thinking about what our foreign policy is going to be. And they have to start doing their homework to figure out what our foreign policy is going to be. And they have to have some knowledge that isn't politically partisan. You know, I see a lot of that. I see a lot of the guy with the book on the UN that's got 300 pages in a three-ring binder, each page with a plastic, you know, page protector, and he can open up that book and point to something that happened and say it's a conspiracy and see, here's this. That's not what I'm talking about. That's not the kind of study that I'm talking about. It's understanding the world, and it's understanding the balance, and it's understanding, you know, the struggles and reading history and everything else. So I'm up here on the deck now. I've walked out of the park. It's still a beautiful sunny day. I have a little bit of coffee left. So, thanks for listening to me expunge my thoughts upon awaking in podcast 437. Thanks to prideofhomes.com for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 437. Again, Eric and Aaron Lucero, a husband and wife, licensed real estate agent team and real estate investors with expertise to share with you. Why do you need it? You need it because there's a lot of houses out there that have been sitting around that have been empty or renovated, and you need to know and have people working with you if you're looking for a house in the Northwest Metro Corridor who understand the market. So reach out to Eric and Aaron Lucero with Luke Team Real Estate, 763-433-9100. 763-433-9100, or check them out online at prideofhomes.com. Thanks to Greg Ryan at Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 437. just very quickly, remember, it's going to get cold. You're going to have plumbing emergencies. In the summer, a plumbing emergency is one thing, but when it's 40 below zero, it's another thing entirely. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating. If you want to avoid an emergency, have them come out and check your water heater and your plumbing and your heating system. It's worth it. Or just remember them for emergency service for business and residential quality replacement and repair of all plumbing and heating and air conditioning systems. Call Ryan in St. Paul at 651-224-4777. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs, too, for four generations. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Let me take a sip of coffee. Because I am still drinking my coffee this morning. Thanks to the digital sponsors of the BobDavisPodcast.com, Alpha Systems. You hear me talk about it all the time. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Bottom line is Alpha AOA saves lives, and it's FAA approved, and they want to be part of your avionics package. Now, click on the Alpha Systems banner for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. All right. It's almost too much for me right now to not be hitting the road. There's a lot of stuff that I want to get out and cover, and I am holding back until February 1st when I'm going to head down to Iowa to cover the Iowa caucuses at probably Greene County. And I want to do a rural caucus. And then from Iowa, I'm going to head on south, and I'm going to go through the Mid-South. So we're talking about Kentucky and Tennessee and parts of southern Ohio and on through West Virginia to Virginia and then to South Carolina. And the reason for that is those are going to be early primary states, some of them, and in particular South Carolina. And I'm going to try to schedule visits and covering some events because I think it's going to be really interesting at that point. If you're following the presidential election, between February 1st and March 20th or so, at the end of Super Tuesday, which is billed as sort of a southern states primary mostly, we're going to get a very clear idea and have a very clear idea of how the presidential race is going to shape up on both sides. And so that's going to be the time to get out and really get to some events and cover because the campaigning is going to be intense. And then I'm heading down to Florida because Florida, of course, also has a primary, and Florida is going to be a really important swing state, key state for 2016. So I'm going to need contributions to the Bob Davis podcasts, and I'm asking for people to send money to the Bob Davis podcast, mobile podcast command. When you make donations, and it's really appreciated, those of you who've made them, I really deeply appreciate them. I leave that money in there, and it goes to maintenance of the vehicle. So the money is for diesel fuel, and it's for getting stuff done. The general manager of the Bob Davis podcast, my mom, donated $400 for the tires. And we're just keeping the thing up and running. And I'm holding back because I don't want to expend resources until the actual voting starts. Because as you know, I'm extremely frustrated with all the polling and the he said, she said in the coverage, and not a single person has voted. So I am going to start covering this thing when people vote. And to do it, we need contributions. We need donations to the BobDavisPodcasts.com, in particular, mobile podcast commands. So here's what you do. You look for the picture of the mobile podcast command unit. It's right there on the top of the Bob Davis podcast page. It's right there on the side slightly. Click on the PayPal button and you can make a donation. Really appreciate it. And thank you guys very much. And thanks for listening to the Bob Davis podcast, podcast 437. I'm going to continue to drink my coffee now that I'm awake. Can you hear me talking faster now that I'm awake? More energy and talk faster with all this coffee.
Letters burning by my bed for you here now. I can feel my instincts here for you here now. By my bed for you here now.